So America, You Kill Me is the story of the late gay rights activist Jeffrey Montgomery, who worked in Detroit and Metro Detroit as well. He is the founded the Triangle Foundation, which of course became a really important organization in pushing for gay rights, you know, at a time. Not that I would imply that all things are resolved in 2022, you know, right now, but very different scenario in the 80s and early 90s when Jeff was doing most of his work. And he's involved, you know, in a place, I think, you know, where on the coasts is where you would have seen most of that activism happening, you know, in San Francisco and L.A. and New York. And he was very much not just a figurehead, I think, in Detroit, but throughout the Midwest. He was very well known here, but he also gained some national notoriety when what was known as the Jenny Jones case, when a guest on the Jenny Jones show, which was a talk show in the 80s, I think led into the early 90s. Forgive me if I'm wrong there. Revealed a gay crush on another guest, and that person ended up killing the person who revealed the gay crush. And it became a very much a cause celeb kind of court case. And Jeff became a very noted spokesperson, talking about the case, talking about the ramifications beyond just what happened between the two people and how it represented, you know, the fight for gay rights at that time.
And Steve, that makes sense, because when we look at Jeff Montgomery's almost superhero-like origin story, he suffers a personal tragedy when his boyfriend was murdered outside of a Detroit bar in 1985, and police didn't even investigate what was seen at the time as just another gay killing. And because this touched Jeff's life personally in a way he really couldn't deny, avoid, it launched him into dedicating the rest of his life into fighting for civil rights for queer people, not just here in Detroit, but all over the country.
That is the instigating moment in the film, and I think very much you could say the instigating moment in his life. And it's you know, one, it's heartbreaking, but the story is very well told in the film, and then it lays out how that incident played out, you know, in another 20 or so years of activism. It's an amazing story. People, you know, who follow Freak Film Festival might know it was set up to be our opening night in 2020. That opening night was scheduled about a month after the pandemic first rolled into the state. Ended up not happening. The filmmakers, led by Daniel Land, who is the director, and the lead producer, John Montgomery, who is Jeff's brother, spent pandemic time improving the film. So I feel confident saying that the version you would have saw in 2020, if we would have had that festival, would have been great. But I think it's better now. And I know Daniel feels that way.
It seems like we've got a really refined product, because this has been percolating for a long time. And talking about Daniel Land's involvement, but also Jeff's brother, John, this is a personal thing for John. John has come on Culture Shift and talked about making this documentary and about his brother and protecting his legacy. But the thing I admire about John and Daniel Land is that this is an honest documentary, because Jeff's life did unravel towards the end. And they don't seem to hold back from the fact that he was not a perfect man. He was not a perfect character.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the, I guess, you know, watching a lot of documentaries myself, a lot of biodocs, some of them tend to canonize the people that they are portraying. That is not the case here. Jeff did have his struggles, definitely, and it comes through very clearly in the film in a couple of ways. One, some of his relationships were fraught. You know, I'm not talking about personal relationships. I'm talking about his activist relationships, his work-life relationships. He wasn't beloved by everyone. I think everyone appreciated the job he did, but I think, you know, he was a bit very big, charismatic personality. And you get the impression he occasionally rubbed people the wrong ways. And, you know, and he did struggle with drinking at the end. And that also comes clear. You know, I don't know if he struggled all the way through, but it becomes clear at the end of his life he's really struggling with it. And the film, despite his brother's involvement in it, does not attempt to only canonize Jeff. It certainly speaks strongly about the importance of his work, but it does not present him as a perfect human being in any way. And as a viewer, I think just a regular viewer, when a person is portrayed in a more nuanced and full way, they are more compelling than if you are to just see a story as like, hey, here's a person who never did anything wrong. Weren't they great? Less compelling film.
This for me is a must see as part of the Freep Film Festival. I'm lucky enough to have met Jeff Montgomery, to have him touch my life, to have many conversations with him. He's a staple of the Cass Corridor as I grew up in this neighborhood. So it's personal for me. I know a lot of people knew Jeff, and he touched a lot of people's lives directly and indirectly through his activism. Another cool local connection, Audra Kubat doing the soundtrack for this. So this is a really homegrown thing, telling a story that, yeah, maybe a lot of people know it, but there's even more that certainly don't. So America, You Kill Me will be a great opportunity to learn about Jeff and his legacy. You're going to be able to see it at the Redford Theater, Thursday, April 28th, 7:30. That's the world premiere. There's also a second chance viewing happening at the Birmingham 8, powered by Imagine. That's going to happen Saturday, April 30th at 7:30. This is a do not miss doc that is part of the Freep Film Festival.
In 1985... my lover was killed outside a bar in Detroit. The worst news came the day after the funeral. A friend of mine from the prosecutor's office called and said, you shouldn't expect any kind of an investigation. It was just another gay killing and not worth the resources. That was the point I knew that my life would be changed.
So many gay people were being beaten and murdered, and virtually no reaction.
Police, by and large, ignore those kind of crimes.
You had a lot of people scared. And here comes Triangle Foundation under the leadership of Jeff Montgomery.
He went from bar to bar, individual to individual, and listened and talked to thousands of people.
Victims, families, survivors, gathering data, publishing data, telling their stories.
He always had his facts together.
He was a pain in the ass.
Well, he could be a rabble rouser.
We must be protected in the hate crime law.
I'm not really sure my staff was ready for it at the time.
It was work that was unpopular, it was risky, it was difficult, it wasn't very well rewarded.
You have to be willing to suffer the slings and arrows and to plant your flag and to say, no, this is what's right. And he was doing that.
Jeff ended his career on an unfortunate note.
Our lives were different.
It wasn't just about him, it was really about us.
Tolerance is not the end of the day for me. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be accepted. I want to be respected.
Talking to Freep Film Festival Executive Director Steve Byrne about some of the movies that are part of this year's lineup. Lots to see. These are just a few that we wanted to highlight and kind of get you thirsty for what else might be part of it. Let's go ahead and talk about this film, Second Chance, which, Steve, I haven't seen, but I read the synopsis and this blew my mind. It's so bizarre when you read about it. But I'll let you do the heavy lifting. What exactly is Second Chance about?
Sure. So yes, I will agree that the description implies that this movie is pretty, it's crazy and over the top in many ways. So you picked up on that correctly. Second Chance is a film that premiered a couple of months ago at Sundance Film Festival. It's going to be getting its Michigan premiere here at Freep. It is the story of a native Detroiter, a guy named Richard Davis, who in the late 60s, after, I'll say, theoretically being robbed outside the Detroit pizza shop that he ran, decided to create a bulletproof vest. And this invention, he's very much an entrepreneurial kind of guy, Richard Davis. He ends up building a bulletproof vest that is adopted by police departments all over the United States. Richard has a very, referring back to Jeff Montgomery, super charismatic type personality, magnetic, at times off-putting and abrasive. And he comes through on this movie as like an apostle for law enforcement in a lot of ways. I mean, law enforcement was making his living because these bulletproof vests were flying off the shelves. Richard, to prove their efficiency or I guess efficacy would be the way to say it, shot himself on camera 192 times. And along with being this bulletproof vest seller, he was kind of an amateur filmmaker. So when you go back into the 70s and 80s at the height of his business, he constantly had a camera on. So this movie just has, I don't know if constantly, but it has very often had cameras on. So it has some incredible archive from the 70s and early 80s, often with Richard pointing a gun at himself and, you know, bolting backwards but being fine because these vests work. Generally, they worked. However, there ended up being some problems with them, as you could probably guess in a doc like this. A few people who were wearing them died. Their value to police departments started to be questioned, and his business went through some tumult. He moved up north. And also had some issues up there with some of his workers and how he was marketing the company. So this film unspools the whole thing. It's a mix of, you know, an over-the-top personality, a very interesting business, very Detroit and Michigan-style story, you know, told largely through the eyes of Richard Davis, who, you know, whether you agree with everything he did or not, you will find him a very interesting guy to spend 90 minutes with.
And to be clear, Steve, this footage of him shooting himself with the vest to prove its effectiveness, at one point, 192 times, this is in the documentary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You see it. You see them again and again, almost to a point where it's played for laughs to a bit. I mean, this movie sounds kind of dark, and it is, and it sounds serious, and it is, and it also, I think, speaks to broader themes with, like, our country's relationship with law enforcement. But at times, I found it really funny. If you have a dark sense of humor, which I tend to, there are a lot of laugh out loud moments, frankly, in it. So it's a movie that works on a lot of levels, I would say.
And that's what makes it interesting. You know, serious topics. There is humor in everything. That's at least Culture Shift's perspective, no doubt about that. The film we're talking about is Second Chance. It is part of the Freep Film Festival. There are two screenings for this one. It's going to be 7 o'clock Friday, April 29th at the Detroit Film Theater at the DIA. There's also a screening 4:30 Saturday, April 30th, Birmingham 8, powered by Imagine. So two chances to see Second Chance. Let's keep checking out some of these movies that are part of the 2022 Freep Film Festival, which is now over 10 years old, right, Steve?
This is our ninth year.
Okay.
If you want to say when we started trying to build it, yes, it's over 10 years old. If you want to say when we actually had a festival, nine.
And for you, you know, film is definitely a passion. You actually used to be an editor at the Detroit Free Press. My editor, a great editor, loved working with you.
I loved working with you, Ryan, as well. You're a great writer.
So you transition into running this festival. And when you think about the importance of this festival or why you do it, you know, what is the heart of this concept, the Freep Film Festival?
Sure. So, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that are kind of the table legs of it. One is, you know, documentaries are kissing cousins of journalism. They don't always react in the same way, but you put a concentric circles up, they're very similar. And the Free Press, you know, wanted to find ways to put its work, and it does create its own documentaries as well, in a kind of different sphere than just throwing it up on the website. So in some ways, it was about getting Free Press work put into a different light. In another way, you know, I think it's a way, you know, as I'm sure you know, newsrooms have been impacted pretty severely in the last 15, 20 years by a lot of times by cutbacks. The Free Press staff isn't as large as it once was. This is a way to get stories told through a Free Press megaphone. We don't necessarily always create them, but in the case of the festival, we are embracing these storytellers. You know, and at the time we started it, there was a lot of documentary filmmaking happening in Detroit, not by the Free Press necessarily, but, you know, people remember movies like Burn or Searching for Sugar Man, which ended up winning the Best Documentary Oscar right around the time of the first festival. You know, we thought that there was an opportunity to corral what was happening in the documentary sphere in our community, and no one was doing it at that time. And, you know, we like Free Press, you know, normally we're on one side of the glass. We're reporting what other people are doing. And I think this was a step out, like, hey, let's get on the other side of the glass. Let's be a little more part of the community rather than just reflecting it.
Another part of journalism, Steve, which I'm a big component of, you know, it's lifting up the story of the every man, the every person that may be happening in your community, but you don't know about, you know, giving them a pedestal so we have a better understanding of who is in our community, what's happening in our community, and a greater sense of empathy for what's in our community. And I think this film, Bad Axe, represents those things. Tell me a little bit about this documentary.
Sure. So Bad Axe is a movie that premiered at the South by Southwest Festival. I guess it would have just been in March. Did extremely well there. Won a couple of audience. So I think it won the audience award for best documentary at that very revered festival. It was created by a native Michigander named David Siev. He had moved to New York, and then during the pandemic, he came back to Michigan. He lived in the town of the title, Bad Axe, where his family ran, I think, what is essentially the town restaurant, a place called Rachel's. And his family is of mixed ethnic. And I think Rachel's as a restaurant was very much considered, a centerpiece of the community. Then the pandemic happens. Then, you know, some stuff that, you know, involving our former president, President Trump, you know, tensions ramping up in that town, and they start to play out at the restaurant. And so David, who was a filmmaker in New York, decides he is going to basically do a first person story through the vantage point of his family's restaurant while the tensions of 2020 are playing out. I think he does it, really spectacularly. You really get a sense of what it's like to be both. I mean, I think one person said, you know, they were very much part of the community, and then they start to feel outside the community. And how does that play out? The Bad Axe is getting a lot of attention since its South by Southwest premiere was just picked up for theatrical distribution, which is, I would say, relatively rare for a first time filmmaker, you know, for a first time filmmaker who grew up in Michigan's thumb to now he's going to be in theaters all over the country. You know, I think I don't know exactly what the timing is on that, but here's a chance, the first chance to see it in Detroit.
An Asian American family in rural Michigan fights to keep its restaurant and the American dream alive in the face of pandemic, racism, and a lot more. That is the focus of Bad Axe. There will be a screening 7:00 Thursday, April 28th at the Detroit Film Theater inside of the DIA.
Say one last thing. Bad Axe is part of a series that we are doing with Frame Restaurant in Hazel Park, where we are partnering meals with films that will be shown on site. Frame built a big tent with a really awesome screen, and the films that are being shown, the meals that are being served are complimentary. Several of the best chefs in Metro Detroit are participating over the course of four films. In this case, the team from Rachel's, meaning the restaurant that is portrayed in the film, is going to be at Frame serving the dinner. So you're going to get a real sense, not just on screen, who these people are, but then you're going to eat the food that they would normally serve.
And for that event, the food-centric event that Steve Byrne is describing, that's happening Saturday, April 30th at 5:00. There'll be a screening. You'll get some dinner. Kind of live in the documentary is the idea.
Absolutely,
really, right?
Absolutely. The people that you'll see on screen are all going to be there.
Pretty incredible. Again, you can see all of the information about all the films that we're talking about over at freepfilmfestival.com. Okay, now you've got our brains focused on food here, Steve. So we'll stay in that space and talk about this documentary, The Taste of Desire. Go ahead, set the table.
Yeah, so Taste of Desire is another one of the films that is showing as part of our series over at Frame. So you're going to see a movie and get a meal that reflects what you saw on screen. Specifically, Taste of Desire, it's a really, really interesting picture. It's not so much a super narrative-driven story. What it does is it takes the oyster and makes it a metaphor for human desire. And you see, I think it's six vignette stories of people who interact with the oyster in various ways. In one case, it's a very, very high-end restaurant that's known as one of the best oyster restaurants in the world. In one case, it's an oyster diver, person who goes and finds oysters and supplies them to restaurants. And in other cases, it's a burlesque dancer. I didn't know this before I watched the film, but apparently there is a tradition of burlesque dancers jumping out of oysters. Not real oysters, oversized oysters that you could fit on stage. So you meet this burlesque dancer, and you also meet somebody who is a pearl diver and is just out there collecting pearls. And so it's done in a very the cinematography is incredible, and it's done in this kind of like nuanced, nuanced way. And, you know, just a high level of aesthetics where you get to, you come away getting with a feeling of like, I understand what drives people and what people, how people's longings play out in their lives, kind of through this interesting little prism of the oyster. And of course, the meal that's going to be served is Cameron Rocha, who is, I think, the head chef over at Mink Detroit. As you can probably guess, it's going to start with oysters, and then it's going to play out in some other seafood themes as well. And I believe chicken too. So multi-course meal that will, I think you watch this movie, you're going to be ready to, you are definitely going to be ready to down an oyster or two. That's for sure.
You could see The Taste of Desire being screened at Frame in Hazel Park. Again, dinner and a movie. This will be happening Thursday, April 28th at 5 o'clock. Tickets at freefilmfestival.com. Really cool concept. Are we seeing this at other film festivals, this food screening combination?
I think it does happen in some cases. I'd like to think that we're doing it. This is, you know, we've toyed with this. We've done one other event like this a few years back, but to do four of them, one on top of each other, and to have the meal really be reflective of what's happening on the screen, I think is an attempt to do it at a high level. I think just having some food and watching a movie, it's not the most original concept in the world, but trying to have the meal directly reflect the film, I think it's a little different.
Are we eating while watching?
No.
Okay.
It's going to be an instance where you will watch the depending on which event you're at, in most cases, half the crowd is going to be watching the film. Half the crowd will be eating in the Frame. But, you know, if anyone's ever been to Frame, it's the backstage place of what's now called Frame Bar. And so you'll be in like a regular restaurant setting. Then you'll shuffle out to the screening place. And those people that were watching the screening will then shuffle into the restaurant.
That makes more sense because I am a notorious movie theater shusher. I couldn't imagine having to compete with the clanking and the, ooh, this is so good while watching a movie.
No, it's not that way. It's one, you know, you arrive one time, but it's kind of separated into two different things.
You're a professional. I'm sure you got it handled.
Yep.
All right, Steve, let's bring it home with a bit of a Michigan sports legend. Not even a little bit, definitely a Michigan sports legend. And that is Magic Johnson. There's a new series about Magic Johnson. It's called They Call Me Magic. And the Freep Film Festival is offering up a bit of this, right?
Yeah, correct. So Apple Plus TV, or Apple TV Plus, excuse me, debuting this month a four-part documentary series about the legendary basketball player Magic Johnson, who of course, most people probably know, grew up in Lansing, Michigan, led Michigan, won a state title in high school basketball, then went to Michigan State and led Michigan State to a national title in college, and then shortly thereafter went to the Lakers and led the Lakers to a world championship in the NBA. Certainly one of the greatest basketball players of all time. The portion we are showing 1/4 of the docuseries, and as you might guess, as Free Press likes to lean into local angles, it's the part that focuses on his time at a Lansing high school and at MSU leading up to the point where he joins the Lakers. The full series debuts this month on Apple, and but we're super excited to be showing one portion of it here. This festival is now not about catering to my personal interests, but I will say I'm a pretty big Michigan State basketball fan, so I'm very personally excited that we are showing this.
This will be screening on Sunday, May 1st, 6 o'clock at the Detroit Film Theater inside of the Detroit Institute of Arts, which is a regular feature we talk about all the time here on Culture Shift. It's an amazing theater. If you haven't been there before, it's a great excuse to finally go check it out as part of the 2022 Freep Film Festival. We've been talking to the executive director of that festival, Steve Byrne, filling us in on all the details. Tickets, again, at freepfilmfestival.com. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time and expanding our worldview through these docs.
We're trying and really appreciate the support of you, Ryan, Culture Shift, and WDT. So thanks so much. Hope to see you and your listeners out at some events coming up over here over the next 5 days.